Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This week, we are doing things a little differently. We're actually airing a conversation that we had on the Taking Control of Your Diabetes podcast. This is a podcast hosted by two endocrinologists, Dr. Steve Edelman and Dr. Jeremy Pettis. We talk about so many things from our approach to nutrition to our thoughts on intermittent fasting and other restrictive diets, and ultimately what we think works best when it comes to nutrition for people with diabetes. Make sure that you tune in until the very end. It was such a fun conversation, and we're going to get right into it.
Welcome to the Diabetes Digital Podcast. I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and we're best friends, registered dietitians, and diabetes educators.
Through our telehealth platform, diabetesdigital.co, we offer accessible and personalized virtual nutrition counseling for people with diabetes and prediabetes.
Visit diabetesdigital.co, that's C-O, to book your first appointment. We accept insurance and offer affordable self-pay options. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Now, we're so excited that you guys are here. And then actually, it was kind of happenstance that after connecting with you guys, we realized that, Jessica, we work with one of your best friends, Ashley, who is a nurse in our clinic. So it's just a small world that I don't think that's actually how we got introduced to you guys, but just kind of found that out later. We really were excited about doing this because it's so critical, this kind of common ground between diabetes providers and, you know, a nutritionist, dietitians, these kinds of things, because obviously diet approaches to food is so important in diabetes. And to be honest, most practitioners, most places that take care of people with diabetes don't have access to people to talk to them about diet, and patients don't have access to this. So we're happy to have you guys here to talk about these really, really important topics. So one of the things that we wanted to kind of jump into is, you know, there's so much information out there about, you know, what the best way to eat is. And that's probably just kind of the number one question we get, which is very vague, is this: I have diabetes, how should I be eating? Like, what's right for me? And obviously, like, you could talk about that for hours, but when someone comes to you and that's probably one of the first things they say, how do you start breaking that down? What kind of, you know, information do you give them?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, I think, you know, I start with asking them, you know, what have you heard? And I'll say, like, since we started our company, I've joined a couple of diabetes support groups on Facebook just to see what the conversation is. And it's a little bit scary in terms of what people are talking about with nutrition. There's just like a ton of misinformation. Everybody is getting super restrictive. They're all saying that they have to cut everything out. And I'm like, no, like, work with one of our dietitians, because we can help you realize that it doesn't have to be that way. But yeah, I try to get a sense of, like, what education have you been given? Because oftentimes people will come in with the idea that they have to cut out all their favorite foods, every single carb, all their cultural foods. And then we can kind of talk about it and talk about what it is that they like eating. What are their preferences? What are the cultural foods that they love? And we, you know, if somebody wants to get on a CGM, we can do that and kind of look more closely at how specific foods are affecting their blood sugars, because we all know that everybody is affected differently. And sometimes that can be really powerful information to have a more personalized system for gaining that feedback. So honestly, I think it's very individualized, and I like to base everything off of a patient's preferences and also their goals, and then kind of work from there.
I can jump in and make a comment before maybe Wendy jumps in there, but I love that approach. I think you're the first dietitian ever to talk about using CGM to make patients see the end result of what they eat and how much they eat, and being able to get to the portion size that keeps their postprandial or their time and range good. So I've never heard a dietitian even, they can't even spell that in our area. Wendy, please.
You guys are funny. We actually did a CGM trial because we wanted to just have that experience to see, you know, what is the connection? Like, what would a patient experience be like if they're using a CGM, and how can they, you know, just put that into practice in terms of, like, making connections between food and their numbers? And even for us as dietitians, like, having knowledge of CGMs, it was very enlightening and very fun too, just to like see the trends and, you know, be able to make those connections. But kind of just adding on to what Jess was saying, I think another really important component in thinking about what is going to work for you is what are you going to be able to sustain long term? Because, you know, I think with a lot of the diets that are trending out there, what I ask people is, are you going to be able to sustain that long term over the years to come, not just over, you know, a few weeks or even a few months? And also, like, is sustaining that over the next few weeks or few months going to bring you more stress, or is it something that you look forward to and that doesn't consume you? Because for a lot of people, especially if, you know, they don't know too much about nutrition, they don't have high health literacy, it's something that's really stressful. They're just like, oh my God, I have to follow things to the T. And if I don't do it properly, then, you know, it's my wrongdoing. Like, I failed at this. There's something wrong with me. And, you know, there's already so much stigma connected with diabetes that we don't want people feeling badly about themselves because they didn't, quote unquote, do things right. So really, like, what do you see yourself doing long term? And let's work around that so that we can remove some of that pressure and shame that comes with diabetes.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, you know, when people come to talk to you guys or see you guys, and I know I've heard this of people going to see dietitians, they're a little scared. You know, I'm going to go in there and they're going to tell me, like, you know, I can't eat this, or, you know, I'm overweight, or just kind of like shame and blame. But people probably ultimately come to you with goals. They want their blood sugars to better. So how do you start that conversation with, when people have probably been trying certain things for decades and, you know, been beaten up by this? So I guess kind of distilling down, like making people feel less guilty and then starting the process of working with them. Like, how do you do that?
Do you have like a therapist couch in your office?
Well, we are companies virtual, so
virtual couch.
I have an office chair. But our intake actually is, people would be surprised because our intake for our clients takes up about 2 sessions, and there's a lot of detail with the questions in terms of like people's relationship with food, because that's not always something that's considered as well. People may have grown up and, you know, had a horrible relationship with food, or maybe they're consistently eating past the point of fullness. Maybe they have some binge eating behaviors going on. We also talk about just the dynamics in the home and how that might impact eating, right? Because I think oftentimes people who might be diagnosed with a condition like diabetes, they might feel that they have to eat something completely different from everybody else. And that changes the dynamic. It makes them feel isolated in the home. So we'll ask about that. We'll ask about if people feel like they have any trigger foods, because so often, you know, especially with a diagnosis like diabetes, people might feel like they can't eat, you know, certain foods and they're off limits. And then when they do eat them, they feel guilty. And so we'll talk about the shame and the guilt. From there, it's all about coming up with goals and giving education around those goals when needed. So for me, the thing that I like to focus on is a variety, right? Like, we always talk about a healthy diet is flexible and it has a lot of variety. So one of the most basic things I encourage my clients to do is try to get at least 3 food groups per meal, right? And that includes carbohydrates. So having a carbohydrate with the meal, a starchy carbohydrate, ideally having a non-starchy carbohydrate as well, like a vegetable, having a protein, and even having some fats in there as well, especially healthy fats like olive oil, avocado. And that's going to be a good way for most people to kind of naturally balance their blood sugar levels and be able to have a variety of food and keep it satisfying.
So, wow. Yeah, no, that's a lot of good information. So when you're seeing these people virtually, then they're coming back, I'm guessing, at a certain interval. How do you measure success with these people?
If they're using a CGM, then we sync the results into our EMR so that we have access to that. And then the dietitians are able to have those conversations and make connections. If they have a glucometer, then we also try to include that into their chart so that, you know, it's just like a reference point. Like, those are values to review. We try to see people on a weekly or biweekly basis. So it's not like a whole month is going by and we have all of these, you know, all of these numbers to review. It's like a pretty close follow-up. And the point of that is to just like have that one-on-one support. And initially it's like, we're, you know, we don't even really talk about food because of what Jess said, because there's so many underlying things that are happening that impact food choices that oftentimes in the beginning, we're exploring that more so than we're exploring like food choices and just trying to like develop that trust with people. So yeah, I mean, those are all markers that we review. And then we also get labs from their providers to see, you know, things like A1C and lipids and, you know, like comprehensive metabolic mm-hmm. panels, like all of those things we want to add to their chart so that we're seeing what the impact is from nutrition therapy.
Also how they feel, right? Because oftentimes we overlook that. And that's such an important marker. It could be energy levels. It could be how are you sleeping? Because if you're under eating, you're not going to sleep well. Or if maybe you are eating more carbohydrates than your body might need per meal, maybe you're going to feel sluggish and sleepy. So I think that's another thing that we'll look at with folks.
You know, as you guys are talking about your services, which sound tremendous, you know, Jeremy mentioned providers earlier. Providers have 15, 20 minutes to go over all the medical problems. To be honest, they're quite ignorant in general about dietary issues. And I've seen dietitians fresh out of dietary school, and they'll tell someone with a certain ethnic background to take a scoop of cottage cheese with Rye Krisp crackers and a scoop of peanut butter, just eat it straight off the spoon. Of course, that's not so bad, but they really don't get into the cultural, what's going on at home, who's doing the cooking. And I'll just give you a quick story of what happened last night. My girlfriend, Jamie, I hope she never listens to this podcast. But
hey, Jamie.
She doesn't know how to cook. She doesn't process. She doesn't say she knows how to cook, but she wanted to make me Valentine's dinner. And so I get home, and there is a big tray of mac and cheese that she made from scratch, not the little box mission, and a mini bundt cake from Nothing But Bundts, and a bottle of wine. So I had like three large portions of mac and cheese, and I enjoyed every bite, but my blood sugars did go up later quite a bit. But that's, you know,
what's the point of this story?
The point of the story is you're sort of trapped in who's doing the cooking.
Oh, got it.
Because like you mentioned, yeah. Well, who does
Valentine's
the cooking
Day. Who does the cooking?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not gonna say, hey, where are the vegetables? You know, so anyway, you know, there's so many variables, and I love the way you guys do your intake. And like you mentioned, Wendy, sometimes you don't even mention food.
9 times out of 10, if you have a dietitian who is taking on a patient-centered approach, the numbers get better. Because of course, there's always circumstances outside of, you know, our control. Like if someone is, you know, they don't have stable housing, there's food insecurity, there's a death in the family, like factors like that, where they're just not in the space to make those changes 100%, you know, you might not see a change. But if someone is motivated and you're centering them, I will see the A1C come down.
So this is another question we talked about too, kind of before chatting with you guys, we wanted to bring up that kind of along these lines of guilt and shame is these, you know, problems with social situations in general for people with diabetes. And this is across the board, type 1, type 2. You're out at a restaurant or the holidays, you know, should you be eating that? You know, oh, you have diabetes, you can't do that. How do you help people manage that? Because, you know, Steve and I talk about that, even when people know that we're endocrinologists, we know that we're very knowledgeable about this space, they still have no shame in kind of just throwing their, you know, advice at us, or, you know, which is meant to be helpful, but it's usually ends up being kind of hurtful. Yeah. So does that come up in your visits, or how do you navigate that with people?
Oh, that's such a great question. And I can relate to that as well, just being a dietitian. And I actually don't like telling people I'm a dietitian, because then they feel on edge, like I'm judging them, when I really could care less what anybody is eating. And then also, I don't know if it's like anxiety or insecurity, but then folks, I feel, will then judge what I'm eating. I remember I was on a plane once, and I don't know how the person knew that I was like the co-host of the Food Heaven podcast. And I don't remember like how it even came up, but I think he said, oh, I listened to that podcast. And he's like, wait a minute, you're a dietitian, you're eating pizza? Why are you eating pizza? And it's like, oh my God, really? So, you know, I think people just need to mind their business, stay in their lane, and Like, that's number one. That has, what somebody's eating has nothing to do with you, and you really should not care. And also, people don't understand that you're looking at one snapshot, right? Like one meal, whether or not that meal is nourishing or going to be helpful for your diabetes or not, like, it doesn't matter, but it's also like one tiny snapshot. And so it's like, they don't know the bigger context. But I just help people come up with, you know, comebacks and kind of practice, like, let's role play. Like, if I say, hey, why are you eating that? What are some examples of things that you can say? And, I mean, I think something as simply as just like, hey, do you mind not actually commenting on what I'm eating? I find it not helpful. And I'm working on, you know, my nutrition with my dietitian, and you're not them, you know, so whatever it is that like makes them feel comfortable, but, or with my endocrinologist, and and just leaving it at that.
No, that's awesome. I'm sure people appreciate that, you know, empowering them to have some comebacks in their pocket for when that happens. It's not if it happens, it's when, because it always does.
When they say, you're a diabetic, you can't eat that, I say, watch this. And then I put it in my mouth. Hey, some myth busters. I got to get these in. Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that you talked about restrictive eating. And tell us about the myth of you have to eat breakfast. And I know that you two may not be the biggest fan of intermittent fasting. And I know it's not for everybody for sure, but what are some of your thoughts on that?
I think it's very individual. You know, I have worked with so many people that don't have a strong appetite in the morning, and I'm actually one of them. I can't just like eat within, you know, 30 minutes of waking up. I do have to wait a few hours. And so, you know, we don't want to force people to like stomach food because it might be beneficial for their diabetes. However, I do think that going, you know, after you wake up, going 8 hours, 10 hours without food, it could potentially impact your food choices later on in the day, especially if you're doing it with this idea that it's going to improve your blood sugars. If you know, for I think for a lot of people, within, you know, 3 to 4 hours, they start getting hungry after they wake up, unless it's been years and years that they just have this habit of, I don't know, waiting, and they've kind of trained their body to eat in this way. So, you know, we don't want to ignore these hunger cues. And I think that's what happens with these diets, is that we're told, well, you know, you should do this, you should do that. We kind of quiet down those intuitive hunger cues that we all have and that we were all born with, in an effort to try to help our blood sugars. And there's so many different ways of eating that can help you achieve your blood sugar goals. And so, you know, that's kind of more my approach. Like, let's just see how you feel your best, and you don't necessarily have to go hours and hours without eating, especially if you're hungry, because you think that it's going to help your A1C.
So it sounds like in general, you guys don't prescribe to any particular, like, there's clearly not a one size fits all diet that everybody with diabetes should do the Mediterranean or intermittent fasting or keto or anything like that. It sounds like you're doing your intake, learning their cultural preferences, maybe figuring out their goals, where they can cut calories or things to improve their blood sugars. But I think that goes back to one of our first questions, is people just want to know, like, what's the answer? What's the diet? And it sounds like it's more, it doesn't sound like it is more complicated than that.
Yeah, honestly, like, trust me, I wish I could just be like, here's a prescription. I feel like I would be rich if that was the case, right? It's like, everybody, this is what it is. But as we know, and as research shows, like, most of the people who go on these diets, and many of them, the goal is to lose weight. Yes, they will lose weight, but majority of them gain the weight back and then some. And I can even say, like, in my work with different clients, oftentimes they have done all these diets, and now that's why they feel like they can't trust themselves, or can't get to a place of trusting themselves with eating. And it feels more comfortable for people to get a handout that tells them exactly what to do. But from my experience, I can say that most people, that it doesn't work long-term, right? Like, yes, you get a handout, maybe, you know, you're motivated to follow whatever the handout is for a week, maybe 2 weeks, maybe a couple months. But, you know, but then what happens when you're going out of town and traveling, mm-hmm. or when this handout doesn't account for the fact that you don't like cottage cheese? And you get sick of these foods. So then where do you go from there? And I think our focus is on the where do you go from there to build a healthy and sustainable relationship with food that supports your health. And if you find that intermittent fasting works for you, because I know that there are a lot of people who that works really well for, I have some family members. And then there's also people who it doesn't work well at all. And I think there's many people who take it to what I would consider a more dangerous place. I'm seeing a lot of people on TikTok or trends where it's like skipping meals and eating every other day, or like the one meal a day. And it's like almost impossible to meet your nutrient needs that way. I mean, it is impossible to meet your nutrient needs that way. And from my experience, that would be something that could be really hard on your blood sugar level. So I think that there's also levels to the intermittent fasting, and that's important to think about too.
I was just thinking as you're talking that, I don't really like take intermittent fasting that seriously for myself, but for most like times I don't eat breakfast because I think like you, Wendy, I'm just not that hungry in the morning. And the other day I was working in the morning, didn't eat like all day, went to like lunch on campus at UCSD, and this kind of had this food court with all these different options. And because I hadn't eaten all morning, I was starving. And so I'm just like, screw it. And I went to Burger King and I got like the number one meal with a Whopper with cheese and French fries. And then that wasn't enough. So I got like chicken nuggets on top of that. And of course, this is the day that like everybody I know in the history of the world is like walking by me when I'm like just scarfing down this like Burger King. So it was just a time that it felt like it kind of like backfired. But then, yeah, I felt like I had to explain it to these people why I'm eating this. It was like all kind of converged on this one moment. And I'm like, why can't I just have some my Whopper in peace?
I got alerted that his blood sugar is like through the roof because I follow him.
Oh, wow.
But I love what you guys are saying, because, you know, do what's sustainable. And Wendy, what you said, you know, a lot of us don't feel like eating breakfast in the morning, but there is a point when you start getting hungry three hours later. And if you really push that, then you just go off the wagon and eat anything. Now, I wanted to ask one last Mythbuster question. This is a really important question. Jeremy and I have been arguing for years, and I want you to tell him why he's wrong when I ask this question. Okay, we're both on cholesterol drugs.
No, just go right for it.
Okay.
So we just debate about
eggs. It's my question.
Eggs in general, that I feel like they've gotten a bad rap, and then that research is now showing that they don't really affect your cholesterol, and it's okay to eat eggs. So I happen to eat eggs, and Steve goes for his egg beaters, which is fine, but he always gives me a hard time about eating eggs.
But the caveat is Jeremy is on expensive cholesterol drugs. That's what bugs me.
But I'd be on them with or without my eggs. So now that you know the history, tell Steve that he's wrong, please.
Well,
you want to take that? You want me to take
and he's 5 to 6 eggs at a time.
Oh, that's not true.
You said that.
I eat one a month. No,
it's one of those hot topics. But the latest dietary guidelines were updated when it comes to dietary cholesterol, because I think before, you know, the belief was that dietary cholesterol affected blood cholesterol. And now what the research is saying is that that's not the case, that dietary cholesterol is more so impacted by saturated fat, which, you know, you'll find in red meat, cheese, you know,
egg
butter,
yolks,
cream, all of those. Well, you know, like just thinking about this, the saturated fat content that egg has compared to like these other foods, it's not going to be as high unless you're like eating a dozen eggs or something like that.
Half a dozen.
Wendy, you're being nice. Jeremy wins. Steve is wrong. I'm going to keep eating my eggs.
And I
updated
will,
guidelines.
I will add to that. There are some people who are more sensitive, and my take is, because sometimes the category can be people with diabetes. So my take is, I always like to just monitor. And I think that's just good for everybody. It's like, I'm not going to take anybody's eggs away. The guidelines say for most people, they're fine to eat. And also, if somebody is concerned about it, we'll look at the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. So if you notice that you started eating 10 eggs a day, and then you're finding that your cholesterol is going up, okay, maybe you're a little bit more sensitive, or maybe we need to cut back and add a little bit more egg beaters in there. So I think it's just kind of a case by case. But for the majority of people, like Wendy said, it's not an issue.
Well, that's good.
All right.
I keep getting my paychecks from Big Egg.
Hey, you guys, could I buy a gift certificate for a couple visits for Jeremy?
Well, you know, seriously, though, what I wanted to ask is that, like, how, like, people are probably listening to this thinking these two are amazing. How do I get access to either actually you guys or people like you? How do they do that?
I don't want anybody else. I want you to. You're so good.
Thank you. Well, we actually take insurance. So, because you mentioned something about a gift certificate. So hopefully most people don't have to use gift cards. But we are in network with Aetna, United, Medicare, soon to be HealthNet, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Cigna.
Yeah.
So most insurance companies, because we wanted it to be accessible for people. And you mentioned many doctors only having 15 minutes or 30 minutes for a visit to cover everything. Our visits are an hour, 53 minutes on average. So we have more time with people. And if somebody wants to work with us, they can just go to our website. It's diabetesdigital.co. That's .co. And if you do diabetesdigital.co/patient, there's an intake form there and it'll gather your info and it'll tell you whether or not we're most likely a network with your insurance. Then we'll do a complimentary benefits verification. If we're not a network, we have an affordable self-pay membership, and we also will give people super bills, or they can pay with FSA, HSA, which is flex spending and health savings. And the only thing that might get in the way of seeing somebody is the fact that we are in about 23 states. We're adding more states rapidly, like getting licensure in those states. But if you are in one of the states we're not in, we'll let you know and we'll save your info for when we're in those states, and we will message you.
So it's just you two? You must have an army of good dietitians. That's a pretty big group of participants. Is it just you two?
No, we have 8 other dietitians on staff, and they're in different states, and they have, you know, different specialties. So, we just want to make sure that we're covering as much as possible. We also have Spanish speaking dietitians. So, everything from PCOS to type 1, one of our dietitians has type 1. So we want to really try to cover all of our bases.
And is this type of service becoming more common? Are there lots of other kind of models like you guys, or?
Not lots, but there's a some. It's up and coming, because, you know, nutrition for a long time, it hasn't been seen as something very valuable within clinical settings, unfortunately. I feel like the profession is very overlooked. So this is definitely our attempt at like making it more front and center, and just like making sure that it's, you know, an important conversation that needs to be had with people with chronic conditions. So there's not a ton, but we're here.
Well, I love that you probably schedule somebody every hour, but then you do 53 minutes. So that gives you 7 minutes to eat probably a hard-boiled egg, you know, a good, you know, snack.
Well, between that's more time than Jeremy's therapist gives him. He's only 40 minutes.
Well, hey, we've loved having you chat with us. And, you know, I think this is going to be on your podcast as well, right? So we can kind of like co-promote this.
But,
is there anything you want to leave people with, or any kind of final words?
Thank you so much for having us. This was so much fun. You guys are a hoot and a holla.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you guys for what you do. You take a unique approach. Mm-hmm. And I am sincerely impressed. And I'm going to go to the website, and I am going to buy a gift certificate for someone I love that needs your help, but not Jeremy. He doesn't need your help.
All right, guys. And thank you, everybody, you so for much. Listening. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you're interested in nutrition counseling with one of our expert dietitians to help improve your prediabetes or diabetes, visit us at diabetesdigital.co.
Also, if you found our conversation helpful, do us a favor and rate and review this podcast on iTunes, plus share with someone who might find this helpful. You can also connect with us on Instagram at diabetesdigital.co.
And tune in every Wednesday for practical, inclusive, and culturally humble diabetes insights. We'll catch you later. Bye.